the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Star! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Cooks the defense as a kid. Deke shoots. Deke shoots. A spectacular rush from end to end. I mean, Kyle Quinlan.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Here comes Horvat to the right side and across the San Jose line. Dropped it back to Barzal. Barzal to the point and the shot. Score! Anders Lee was in the slot. That shot by Dobson from the point gets deflected home, and it's 3-1 New York. A tough, tough moment with 26.2 seconds remaining in the second period.
You know, every team goes through these types of things, so we have something going through the room, and I thought at moments we played with some good pace, and we were skating, we were competing harder, and then we make some, awful mistakes, and they're in the back of our net.
All right, good morning, everyone. I hope everyone's Sunday is off to a nice start. For the San Jose Sharks, the quote that you heard coming in there from head coach Ryan Warsawski publicly acknowledging that there is a virus running through his team, I think that tells you how big of a deal that it is, because a lot of times coaches don't want to acknowledge that. They don't want to bring it to the forefront. They don't want to quote unquote make excuses. And Ryan Warsawski very much strikes me as that type of a guy. The fact that he is acknowledging it in the slightest tells me that it is a pretty big deal. And I don't mean that it's some killer virus sweeping through the team, but no, I think there's a number of guys on the team that are under the weather, and you add that with a difficult road trip, and you also combine that with missing some guys due to injury like a Tyler Toffoli, and you have a recipe for a Sharks team that looked as pretty much flat as they have in the last two games. I think that you look at the game against Detroit, they were full of energy. They really looked like they had a lot of momentum going for them. And then in the last two games, they have looked really, really flat. The term I've been using is anemic. They've not been doing much in terms of chance creation. They've not been doing much in terms of their overall ability to score goals. They've just looked non-potent. They have not looked like they have been dangerous or threatening. And when you take into account that maybe there is something going on with the team in terms of an illness, yeah, we all know what it's like to be sick and have to go and do your job. It's not very fun, and you're not going to be maybe as good as you would otherwise like to be. So for a sport like hockey, if there is a virus going through the Sharks team like it, appears that there is, then that's definitely going to have an impact on performance. I'm not saying it's the be-all, end-all. I'm just saying that that clearly has to be taken into account with what's going on with the team in the last couple of games and just how flat they have looked and their overall ability to not get goals and not be able to get shots on frame. And we've seen it in so many of their games as of late. Three of the last five, they've had 20 or fewer shots. That is not going to get it done in the NHL. I can just point that out, that you have a very strong correlation between shot generation and goals scored. It's not the only thing that matters, as the Sharks did not have a high number of chances created against Detroit. I believe 24 shots on goal, but they ended up putting six in the back of the net. That is a maybe not best case scenario, but very, very, very good case scenario to where your chances are going in. And yes, you can look to the game against Minnesota where they had, 37 shots, but Fleury shut them down. Okay, that's a situation where you get beaten by the best or one of the best of all time. I'm not going to have too much of a problem with that. But when I do look big picture at the Sharks' lack of chance creation, that to me is the overriding theme that we have seen in their ability to simply not be able to score. Their inability to score probably is what I should say. And that's just something that we've seen over and over and over again. And that is the consistent factor with what we've seen from San Jose. Again, we look at the month of January. They had two goals in a win against Tampa, three goals in a win against Jersey, two goals in a loss against Vegas, one goal in a loss against Utah, one goal in a loss against Minnesota, six goals in a win against Detroit, then one goal in a loss against Columbus, and one goal in a loss against the Islanders. Let's just go back a month into December and look at the end of the month. They got shut out against Philadelphia. They scored one goal versus Calgary. They had three goals against Vegas in a loss, three goals in a loss against Vancouver. They had two goals in a loss against Edmonton, two goals in a loss against Colorado, three goals in a loss against Winnipeg, three goals in a loss against Utah. Lo and behold, four goals in a win over St. Louis. And then you had two goals in a loss against Carolina, one goal in a loss against Florida, one goal in a loss against Tampa Bay, two goals in a win against Washington. So this is a long-term thing now with San Jose. They have just not been scoring. They have not been getting their overall ability, you know, to put pucks in the back of the net. In fact, we look at that month, they scored four or more one time. And then we look in the month of January, they have scored more than four goals one time. Now that to me is enough of a sample size to where you're looking at 1 2/3 months to say, yes, you've only scored four or more two times. That's going to be a problem for San Jose. It's not going to help your chances to win. And that, going back to my, you know, thoughts of the team in training camp and in the preseason, my main reaction was, how is this team going to score enough goals? We've seen Mikael Granlund and Fabian Zetterlund cool as of late, and I think that's been part of the issue as well. And if you heard the build-up yesterday, I was talking to Jason Demers, and we're going to hear more of that interview later in this episode. But, you know, I asked him about the fact that contract negotiations and trade deadline rumors have been swirling over both those guys, and if it has anything to do with their lack of production. And he said, sure, that can definitely have an impact. He said, guys are humans. Guys definitely have things that pop up in their head and, you know, impact their play on the ice. And he talked about, you know, when he was playing around trade deadline, every time his phone rang, he wondered if that was going to be the call that meant he was getting the trade. And so I think that's definitely something we take into account when we look at where San Jose is right now, when we look at where their offense has not been. Those two guys have cooled down. No surprise that we have not seen them, you know, play at the whole level that we think they're capable of. And then we look, you know, at the team at large. If Zetterlund and Granlund aren't scoring, if you're not getting as much out of those two guys, I think that allows for more emphasis to be placed on the shoulders of a Toffoli and Eklund and a Celebrini. And I think that ultimately leads to maybe those guys gripping a little bit and trying to make something happen. And again, the chance generation is also predicated upon your ability to control the puck in the offensive zone, which is something the Sharks have not been getting. If you get fewer shots overall, you're not going to have as many second and third chance opportunities, which is where a guy like Tyler Toffoli can come up big, which is where a guy like Luke Cunning can come up big. And that's just something that hasn't been happening. If you have not been able to control the puck in the offensive zone, if you're defending too much, if you're tired, that's an issue. The power play as well. They had one opportunity last night, and it did not look good in the slightest. It really just looked like they were out of gas from the get-go. It did not look like they had the man advantage. And that's pretty telling when you're going up against an Islanders team that entering the day had the worst penalty kill in the league. And they also had the worst power play in the league. And the fact that the Sharks could not take advantage more of the special teams battle and find a way to get a goal or more power play opportunities. And yes, you can only do so much without the game is being called on any given game day. But, you know, there was just nothing that told you during that game that the Sharks were going to be able to suddenly turn things around. You didn't see an incredible effort. You didn't see an incredible performance from any individual player. You didn't see a great drive, which I think, again, that's probably influenced by the illness going around with the team. But you just didn't see enough for a second consecutive game that led you to believe that the Sharks were going to be able to pull out a win. And I think that, you know, even in the game against Columbus, they had a little bit of a push late. There was no push in this game. They just got down and they simply were not able to fight their way back into it. Yes, they had one moment where they had the goal from Barclay Goodrow, but that was it. Like, you had a goal and then you give up a goal 40 seconds later, which is something the Sharks have done entirely too often this year. And then suddenly, you know, it's 2-1, and then they just did not have a lot of push. And then later on in that second period, it was a 3-1 lead with 26 point something seconds remaining in the period. And the Sharks were staring up at a two-goal deficit, and obviously, like I said, they've only scored four or more two times in the last month and two-thirds, so trying to come from behind of a 3-1 deficit, it didn't seem like it was going to happen. Then you get a goal in the third period that puts New York up 4-1. At that point, there didn't feel like there was going to be any magical comeback. Yes, a year ago in New York against the Islanders, the Sharks were able to mount an improbable comeback, and it was great. It was one of their best moments of the season on that road trip. But that just wasn't happening in this game. That was not going to be the narrative that was told. It's unfortunate, but, you know, the Sharks are probably looking at right now at regrouping, getting ready for an early game on Monday. It's a 10 o'clock go time, 9:30 pregame right here on the Sharks Audio Network, but that's got to be their next point of focus. They still have a chance to walk away from this road trip with a winning record. I think that both Boston and Nashville are winnable games, although Boston is very difficult for San Jose because we simply just do not play well there lately. but it's a Boston team that's been not performing up to snuff, and San Jose probably is looking to rebound. And you've got to be able to forget what happened in the previous game or games in the National Hockey League if you want to have a great performance. And I think that that's probably one of the things we've seen from Georgiev lately. He was not on the hook in this game, and anybody trying to blame him or throw in the Georgiev nickname that was attributed to him in Colorado wasn't watching that game. There were multiple bad opportunities that led to the Sharks giving up those goals. Maybe the fourth goal was the only one that you really want back, but at that point, you know, that's a point in the game where you're already down and you didn't show any offensive support for him up to that point. The first three goals were not on him. He did not have an opportunity to make the stop. He did not, you know, was not put in a good position. That's the Sharks, you know, simply giving up good opportunities. And I believe the third goal even tipped off of Wemberg and then Thrun. And then I believe it went off of Georgiev's mask before finding its way to the back of the net. That's just the fluky nature of hockey. But those first three goals, I'm not really putting on him. I guess if you really want to make a case of it, you could say that he maybe could have stopped that second goal. I don't think he could have. And then the fourth goal, yeah, I think there was a little bit of a screen. If he had to do it over again, he probably wants it back. But again, if you're only looking at two goals where you think your goalie got beat, you ostensibly should be able to come up with the offense that you need. They didn't come up with the offense that they needed at all. So we are looking at, you know, a situation where Georgiev and essentially whoever's playing goal for the Sharks right now, they need to be perfect. And that is not a situation you want to put your team in. You do not want to say, hey, Mr. Goalie, I need you to be perfect today because we're not going to be able to provide you almost any offense. If you look at the amount of times the Sharks have scored one goal in the calendar year, if you look at the fact that they're just not scoring goals in the slightest, that's not how you go about winning a game. That's not a winning formula in the NHL. I, you know, don't want to sound harsh here, but you have to come to that reality that if you do not score goals or if you're only capable of scoring one goal, that means your goalie has to be perfect or you lose. That's not going to do it. That's not the formula for success. All right, let's get into some of these highlights from last night. It was the Islanders who struck first.
Cody gets it back, feeds Ferraro far side. Uh-oh, make that Wallman. Wallman lost it. And here comes Barzal. He's dangerous. Fakes into the zone. Shoots. Score! There was going to be a penalty called against the Sharks on that play as Wallman turned over the puck. And all the way down the ice came the crafty Mac Barzal to put the Islanders in front. 1-0. Barzal getting his sixth goal of the season.
So at 8:47 of the first period, the Sharks are down by a goal off a giveaway. No, it was not the worst play that I've ever seen from Jake Wallman or anything like that. He just lost the puck at a bad place, and Barzal with his speed, that's going to end up in the back of the net. He's a star for a reason. But the Sharks, you know, fewer than 90 seconds later, they came up with an answer of their own from Barclay Goodrow, his first goal in over 20 games.
Right now down the right wing side, though, the Sharks move in. Shot by Goodrow. Score! Barclay Goodrow stopping at the right circle and just letting the shot go. It goes up high and gets by Hartberg. How do you like that? Barclay Goodrow of the San Jose Sharks gets his third goal of the season, and that's a big one. It ties the game 1-1.
Now, I don't want to be the guy who does the obvious and say, see, that went in. Look, the thing that succeeded worked. They should do that again because that's cheap. But I do want to point out that in that instance, Barclay Goodrow went on frame. He just decided to throw it in there and see what would happen, and somehow it went in. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to happen every single time, but the point is you don't get that chance to score a goal unless you put it on frame. If you put it on frame, you can walk away with a good result. That's the most important thing that you should be taking away from that instance. That's the light bulb moment, right? Where you see, hey, that made it through. That made something happen. Maybe we should be a little bit more just overall liberal with our shot selection and don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Just put pucks on frame and see what happens. Unfortunately, that message did not get through for the San Jose Sharks, and they did not find the ability to score more goals or get more shots throughout the game. 19 shots on goal. I don't know why, but that number 19 for shots on goal shows up a lot for San Jose as of late. And then just 40 seconds later, the Islanders retake the lead for good.
Here come the Islanders moving in. Brock Nelson poke, score! Right up the ice for the Islanders. They created a mini 2-on-1, and Brock Nelson is just deadly by getting that pass from the right wing side, and it goes up top on Georgiev, and that's a tough one to give up after the Sharks just scored. Brock Nelson gets his 13th goal of the season, and it is 2-1 Islanders.
And I will say that at the end of the second period, after the Sharks are down 2-1 now, they did have a decent push. They did try and get a little bit more offensive production. They did look a little bit more dangerous, and they got, for the only time of the game, a little bit of extended ozone time. Unfortunately for San Jose, with about 26-point-odd seconds remaining, they gave up another goal. Noah Dobson put one in the back of the net, completely against the run of play. So instead of the Sharks being able to find their way back into it and make it a 2-2 game, they give up the late period goal, and suddenly they are down 3-1.
Here comes Horvat to the right side and across the San Jose line. Dropped it back to Barzal. Barzal to the point, and the shot, score! Anders Lee was in the slot. That shot by Dobson from the point gets deflected home, and it's 3-1 New York. A tough, tough moment with 26.2 seconds remaining in the second period.
The late period goal is always a bit of a deflator. I think you combine that with whatever is running through the Sharks team, and you have a rough night for San Jose ahead. They did not find any offense in the third period. They did not find any great pushback. They ended up giving another goal a minute in. They're down 4-1. And you could just tell that there was not going to be a comeback on this day. They just didn't have it. For a multitude of reasons, they didn't have it, and they were just left to move on, lick their wounds, and get ready for Boston, an early affair on Monday. Again, big-time reminder, 9:30 pregame, 10 o'clock go time. Get your coffee ready. I'll be on NBC Sports California with our good friend Alan Hoshida. But the fact is, the Sharks just didn't have it on this day. Again, multiple reasons as to why they didn't have it. Let's hear from head coach Ryan Warsawski again. You heard it at the start in case you're joining late. He did acknowledge there is something running through the room, but that's no excuse for the way they played.
You know, every team goes through these types of things, so we have something going through the room. And, you know, I thought at moments we played with some good pace, and we were skating, we were competing harder, and then we make some, you know, awful mistakes, and they're back of our net.
When it rains, it pours, and that is most definitely the case for San Jose with where they are as a franchise right now. When they do make mistakes, it seems like they are punished for them consistently. If you give away the puck when you're at the blue line trying to move in and make an offensive opportunity, it's not like it just gets taken back by the opposition. Barzal goes, you know, not quite coast-to-coast, but close to it, and puts it in the back of the net. As to the illness and injuries, good little back and forth here with Sheng Peng of NBC Sports California and San Jose Hockey Now about what's going on with Liljegren and Toffoli, and Ryan Warskowski's comments on their potential availability for the upcoming game against Boston.
Liljegren, he has the flu. Is that right? And is there a concern that he won't be available for the Boston game?
I have no idea yet.
Okay. And how about Toffoli? What was his lower body injury?
Yeah, lower body happened this morning in morning skate.
Morning skate, okay. All right, so did he kind of go out for warm-ups, test it out?
Yeah.
Is he an issue for or a concern for the Boston game?
Day-to-day.
So at this point, it is a little bit early to try and figure out who is and who is not going to be available for the upcoming game against Boston. Hopefully the team will be able to recover quickly from whatever is going through, and the guys are able to bounce back with that much better of a performance. Warsawski was also asked about Colin Graf, who was initially supposed to be off last night, but then once Toffoli was the late scratch, Graf found himself inserted into the lineup.
Yeah, I thought he could try to compete for pucks. He's trying to do the right things. He's obviously, he's come up, played, you know, what, 5-6 games now. You know, I thought his shifts can be inconsistent at times, but we're getting. He's finding that it's a big boys game, and you're going to be able to compete for pucks, win pucks. If you want to create offense, you got to win some 50-50 pucks. And it's not just him, it's our whole team. We just don't win enough 50-50 pucks.
Yep, win those 50-50 pucks, you'll have a better chance of creating more ozone time, something the Sharks most definitely need to work on. All right, switching gears, I did not have enough time yesterday to fit all of my interview with Jason Demers on the buildup, so you can hear what you didn't hear right now. Is it fun for you now that you've made the switch to the quote-unquote dark side after your playing career, that now you've got the NHL Network stuff, you're doing stuff with Dan Ruzanowski on these radio broadcasts? Did you figure that this is where your career would head after your playing days came to an end, or did you never really think this would be the direction you'd go?
Yeah, I mean, I was never sure of how it would go. Obviously, you know, thinking I'd still be playing until I was 45, like Jaromir Jagr, but obviously those things don't happen the way you plan it at times. So I kind of adjusted on the fly, and you know, my family and my wife were kind of pushing me into this a little bit, and I said, you know what, I'll try it. I'll just dip my toe in, and you know, started last year with some NHL Network stuff, and then you know, I did the pre and post intermission reports with the Sharks in San Francisco at their studio. And I enjoyed it. I really liked it. It keeps you in the game. It allows me to contribute to the league, a league that was so good to me and was provided for me and my family. So it's been a fun transition. It's been something that's been easier on my body. My voice has taken a little bit more of a hit, but my body's feels great. I get to watch these games and not feel sore the next day, but sometimes obviously just mentally sore from having to jump hurdles and keep up with some of my colleagues who are just, some of the best in the game.
Is it weird to having to, maybe talk about guys that were former teammates or just guys that you knew throughout your time in the league to where you're thinking, man, this is weird to be on the other side where you're maybe not necessarily critiquing them, but you're speaking about their game in the way that you heard the media talk about your game at times?
Yeah, it's really tough towing the line. That's the toughest thing, especially as an ex-player, because, when I'm just being reactionary, I mean, it's very difficult to not, point out things that you see that happen that are wrong. And then at times you're saying that, and it's somebody that you like, that's a friend of yours, an ex-teammate, but you have to have that honesty to say, listen, that was a mistake here, or that was a good play there. So it's really, it's tough to walk that line and make sure you're not being too, because fans will see right through it. Fans will see right through it if you're kind of protecting guys and things like that. But you also can't just bury random people, because as a player, I understand that there's a lot that goes into a mistake, and there's a lot that goes into a turnover, and that you don't see on TV, whether it's, you look the wrong way, or somebody called for the puck when they shouldn't have called for the puck, or, it just hits a rut in the ice. And, fans aren't as forgiving as someone like me would be, but I just have to always watch myself that I'm not too reactionary, but also, making sure that my honesty levels are at the right amount so that I don't, alienate the fans.
And it's funny because in a TV broadcast of a game, you'll watch a play, a goal gets scored, and the camera always pans to the goalie who's, doing the big pull of the Gatorade bottle at the end. And it's always like, oh, the goalie let it in. But I'm sure you're looking at it and thinking like, well, actually there were two, three defensive breakdowns that led to that, maybe not even an odd man rush, but just putting the goalie in a bad situation. But it's like, you also don't want to, take the pressure off of anybody or, kind of not make everybody accountable, because everyone is accountable out there, but it's always like there's one aspect of a play that seems to be focused in on and not the entirety. And that's kind of your job to explain oftentimes, like, okay, well, here's actually what did happen.
Yeah, it's so I don't think, my first reaction at being a defenseman is never blaming the goalie. So, there'll be guys that'll be like, oh, that goalie let us off then. And I'm like, yeah, but there's this play, this play, this play that led to the goal. So I always have to be careful because I protect the goalies more than I should at times. But yeah, I always see it from the lens of a defenseman, and if it were my way and, everything was perfect, I would expect every game to be 0-0 going into shootout, just because I see any goal as a mistake by a defenseman. And that's just the way when I played, it was, if I was on the ice for a goal, it was my fault or my partner's fault. It was never the goalie's fault. So it's, you have to separate those a little bit, and it's good being up top and having the bird's eye view, because you really see it unfold rather quickly and rather smoothly. And it's an easy game from up there. And if when you're looking at a replay and looking back at video, you can make anybody look bad on any goal against or any mistake, because that is the beautiful thing about hockey. It's five guys that are playing and one goalie, and for the puck to go into the net, there needs to be a couple breakdowns on every play for that to for the puck to go in. So it's never one person. It's a group. It's a team sport, and that's what makes it tough to kind of call and separate that to fans and tell them that, hey, it wasn't just this person. It was also, this miscue on this forecheck, and maybe the structure wasn't right. And then obviously at the end, the goaltender just let in a soft one that he, doesn't typically let in.
I think it was Scott Hannon who said to me, the further you get away from the ice, the easier the game looks. Is it weird for you now to look at these games from the top down and always be analyzing from that TV camera angle, whereas you used to be on the ice. Because just even when I've been, you know, on the glass for a game, it presents as a totally different sport as opposed to watching from above.
Yeah, I joke that, you know, there's games where I look, because I'm still fresh out of the game, I find, and, you know, I feel really good in my body and everything, you know, since not playing and every, you know, not having had the grind of a season, you'll look at some games and be like, yeah, I can play. This is easy. Like, how do they not see this? But then you really take a step back and go, oh no, I'd probably, you know, it would be tough for me out there, you know, not having skated in a while and all that stuff. So you always kind of laugh, and it seems like it in your head, the competitor in you is always like, yeah, it's easy. It's, you know, it's the game from that far back and, you know, at your house, sitting down comfortably on a couch is so very simple, but there's so much that goes into it and so much physicality. And once I kind of just check myself, I'm always like, yeah, no, it's, you got to give these guys a little bit of grace at times because it's 82 games. They're making good money. There's no question of that, but it is a tough game, and it's a tough game in and out, and it is a grind with the travel and the, you know, where you're staying and flights, and it's just it's a very tough, difficult job. So, you know, it's, listen, they're well compensated for it for good reason, and that's where the, you know, not letting them off the hook on certain things is important, because fans will see right through it, and but also just knowing that, hey, it ain't an easy sport. So the guys that make it look really easy are really that special and incredible.
I was talking to Craig Button of TSN the other day, and he was talking about the development of defensemen and how it takes time. And I think a lot of Sharks fans are not necessarily impatient, but they look at a player like Shakir Mukhmadulin, who was up for a while, and then, you know, he goes back down. And, you know, Button said that, you know, that doesn't mean that Shakir's play isn't progressing. It's just that this is what the Sharks are doing right now to develop his game. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, when you've seen Mukhmadulin play, do you still see a guy who's still learning the game? I mean, I feel like people overlook the fact that he is, you know, as young as he is, he just happens to be a giant on the ice.
Yeah, you know, listen, I think they're doing the right thing by him. A defenseman takes always a little bit longer, and listen, the Sharks are a lot better than they were last year. They're a lot more competitive, but, you know, they still have times where, you know, they have some tough games. And, you know, you look at the Columbus game, last game was a tough game. And, you know, they've had some ones where if you're not kind of an older guy and understand how the league is and understand how your team is, you could take a hit on your confidence and really build some bad habits. So I don't think you want Shakir to build any bad habits this early in his career. You want him to kind of go down to a Barracuda team who has been competitive on most nights. So it's good for those kids to see that game in the AHL. You know, I learned a lot from that league. It's a different league in terms of it's a little bit more scrambly and less structured, but I feel like learning that is good, because once you come up to the NHL and see the structure, it almost becomes a little bit easier to play when you're that skilled like Shakir is. So I think Shakir's just got to learn a little bit more. You know, he's going to learn how to use his body. He needs to put on a little bit more weight. But, you know, I think his details and teaching him the details are important, and he can get that level of, you know, attention down there from the coaching staff, and he can learn about having his stick in the right place and using his length properly and things like that. And that's only going to help him down the road. And I don't think there's a rush. So I know fans probably want him up now, but, you know, he'll be up soon, and he'll be up, you know, post trade deadline and play the last 15, 20 games, and everybody will be like, oh, there he is. So, you know, I know in the moment it's tough to not want him here now, but I think they have some other things they're trying to work through. And Mike Gurr is trying to really build something for the future here, so he has to kind of put his best foot forward in terms of who he's deploying on the ice and who he's got up there, and not rushing anybody.
Again, that is former San Jose Shark Jason Demers joining us now on the Sharks Audio Network. We'll be on the call once again on Monday when the Sharks are in Boston taking on the Bruins. We're out of time. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.